Well, that's better than no introduction at all. I guess. You got to compare it with something, and nothing's about as close to anything as I know to compare it with. I forgot something tonight. I forgot to go to the bathroom. But it ain't my fault. It's my wife's fault. She got me all upset and all nervous. I want to say something before I get started talking. I guess we're all here because we're not all there. And I think everybody I see is here. And for this, I am most grateful. And speaking of gratitude, I'd certainly be amiss if I didn't thank Clarence Roberts. He gave me a nickel to call his name. Clarence Roberts, and anyone else who is responsible for me being invited to come. Now, maybe being invited to come don't mean anything to you, but it means a great deal to me, because I have been invited to leave so many places. In fact, I have been told that I have been escorted away from many places. So to be invited is real, real important to me. Speaking to you people is more or less, I feel more or less like I do when I, if I were to get the opportunity to speak to my local group. Because I know most all of you. But there again, I'm enough of a ham that it don't bother me. I only have one message to tell, whether it's to you, to my group, or to anyone else. And that's all that I can attempt to do, is to share my strength, hope, and experience with you. We've had a wonderful day today. We had a hard time eating. We wasn't given any money to eat on. And being a guest of Roundup, I thought that we would get our expenses. But we rode around quite a bit today. I live on a little lake and walk on the water every day. And there wasn't any water here, so we had to go over to Chattanooga. Your speaker tomorrow night visited with us a couple of weeks ago, and he learned to walk on water. So I had to go over and see if it still worked. And then we had this little Yankee gal from up in New York State who's never walked on water. So we had to take her and teach her how. And I hope that she did learn. I sell spiritual awakenings and inventories. And I want to recognize a man in our midst tonight that some 14 years ago I sold him a spiritual awakening at a reduced price of $15. And he has not had a drink from that day to this. So it really works. It really works. So I'd like for my friend Mac McCollum from Memphis to stand as a living example of what I can do for you. Now, in case any of you are interested in spiritual awakenings, Jim Hawkins is my distributor in Alabama. And Clarence Roberts is my distributor in the Southeast, Harold Wilson in West Texas, Chuck C. on the West Coast, and Jim Howes at large. Now, Jim Howes is a trustee at large, and him being a trustee is all right, I guess, and him being able to sell my spiritual awakenings is all right, but this is large business. That's bad. A man like Jim Howes should never be at large. He should be confined. When Clarence Roberts called me, he told me when he bought this deal out from Jim Howes that he was going to improve this thing. So he called me and said that he was a little premature, maybe, in changing the Roundup, but that he certainly wanted to upgrade it. So he was beginning by upgrading the speakers. He was asking me and Harold to speak. That evidently didn't go over too well. I'm awfully glad my wife could be with me tonight. She can't make as many of these things as I do because she wakes. Now, I try not to do anything in the world to interfere with that gal's wake. But I want it clearly understood with you cats that she don't have to wake. Darn it, she can go naked and starve to death if she wants to. Now, while I'm mentioning my wife, I'd just like to tell you a few things about her. She's 5'10", just any way you want to take her. Sitting down, laying down, standing up, on her side, or just any way. And back in our neck of the woods, she's known as best dressed. And I've seen this gal in a bikini, and believe you me, she is best dressed. So I'd like for my drunk wife, Eloise, to stand and be recognized, please. Now, Eloise, too, is a member of this blessed fellowship. I met her in AA, and we were married in matrimony and ceremony. And we have an AA meeting at home every night. They tell me anytime two or more resentments are gathered together, there can be an AA meeting. Some of them are good and some of them are not. Most of them are not because she does most of the talking. But occasionally I get to say a few words and we have a good meeting. Now, I don't have a bit of trouble in the world with the 10th step, because when I am wrong, she promptly admits it. And she works this program the way she wants to, and I work it the way that she tells me to. In keeping with the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, my name is Franklin W., and I am an alcoholic. By the grace of God, to fellowship with men and women like you, and because this program does work, it hadn't been necessary for me to take a drink today. And for this, I am most grateful. Be there any members of the press, radio, or television in the audience, my name is Franklin Williams. W-I-L-L-I-A-M-S. Now, this S on the end of it would indicate there's more than one of me, but there ain't. And for this, my wife is most grateful. Now, as your chairman stated, I live in Olive Branch M, and I attend AA in Memphis T. Now, I don't give a rap about my anonymity, but both states wish that I keep theirs. Now, I am a member in good standing of the Quonset group in Memphis T. And I think this is the best group in the world purely and simply because I am a part of this group. And I think that if you don't think this about your group, you better find you another one. And you better get to be a part of it. Our group is different from most groups. We are known as the Silk Stocking Group. And you can look at me and tell that that's where I belong. But we differ in other respects. We only accept alcoholics which come under two categories, one of two categories. We screen them. And the only ones that we will accept are either boy alcoholics or girl alcoholics. Now, we boy alcoholics have learned that you girl alcoholics have different bottoms from what we boy alcoholics do. And we are very observant. Now, we boy alcoholics respect you gals alcoholics' bottoms. And I might add, at my age, that's all in the devil that I can do. I bring you greetings from Olive Branch M and Memphis T, and I want to welcome any Al-Anons who are in our midst, and I know there are some because I know many of you. And I'm not just mouthing when I say that, or echo what Bill said many years ago, that the greatest thing next to Alcoholics Anonymous that has happened in this century is the fellowship of Al-Anon and Alateen. And I mean this, because it's not so much what I have been able to figure out in this program as what I have been able to see. And I have seen and experienced where the spouse would come to Al-Anon before the mate came to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she would go back and things would be different in that home. And maybe she would tell this spouse or he would tell this spouse that I have found a way that I can live and release you. And if you want to drink, go on and drink. There's nothing I can do about it. But if you ever want to do something about it, I wish you would join me. And the drunk is a curious animal. He's going to want to know what in the devil's going on. And I've seen this drunk come to our fellowship after the Al-Anon had been there. And I've seen these Alateens go and then the parent come to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know it works. It really works because I have seen it. Now, lest you Al-Anons feel too smugly, you just remember that we darn drunks got you where you are today. So welcome you Al-Anons and you Alateens, and welcome any earth people, be there any in our midst. Quite frankly, I don't understand you, but you do allow me the opportunity to practice patience and tolerance. You might not have gathered from my prior remarks that I have humility, but I just want to tell you I'm dripping with the stuff. And they tell me that when a man gets up here behind one of these church-like fixtures and says he has humility, he ain't. He done lost it. But that ain't so. Humility is the truth. And I know what the truth is. I have this humility, and I had it when I was bodaciously brung to you people. The type of humility I have, you don't acquire it. You either have it or you don't have it. And some, like me, are fortunate in having it. I think it's like these earth people trying to become an alcoholic. Work as hard as they may, they just can't become alcoholics. They don't have the stick-to-itiveness. When the going gets really rough and you think that you're going to die without getting that next drink, these earth people will stop. But that's when you got to really work at this thing. I don't think the earth people have got the willpower to ever become alcoholics. And then another thing, you got to make real quick split moment decisions. You got to crawl to that bathroom and chin up to that bowl and then real quick like make up your mind which end you're going to put on that pot first. The wrong decision can be messy as the devil. So you've got to have a lot of determination and a lot of willpower to become an alcoholic and keep on drinking. And by the same token, I had to have a lot of willpower and a lot of stick-to-itiveness and a lot of determination and a lot of motivation to ever stop drinking. I liken it to this. First time I ever tried to kiss a little girl, I don't know how old I was backward and everything, so I must have been pretty old. But I tried and I didn't have any luck. And these are not the words that she told me, but in effect, this is what she told me. Says, old buddy, if you want what I have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, then there are certain steps which you must take. At some of these I balked. I thought I could find an easier, softer way. There is no easier, softer way, as far as I'm concerned, to stop drinking. It's either do what this program of Alcoholics Anonymous says do or die. This is my opinion, and this is what I get from the big book. Tomorrow night you'll have a man that'll ram this big book down your throat. He knows this big book from kiver to kiver. A lot of people tote the big book under the arm to let people know they have the big book. A lot of people quote the big book to let you know they've read it. There are a few of us, like I and Clarence, who walk the big book. And I'd rather see a man walk the big book than anything else in the world. Because I may be, or you may be, the only big book that some drunk ever reads. And I think it's important to me for my sobriety and my peace of mind and my being comfortable with me to try to the best of my ability each day to practice the principles that I have learned, and I'll tell you later on what these principles are as far as I am concerned. In my sermon tonight, I want to stress three things, and there'll be some brevity to it, which is unusual for me. But this brevity is due to lack of time, because there is another meeting here in the morning, and not to the lack of importance of any of these. First, the simplicity of this program. I was telling Harold this afternoon that the longer I am around you people, and the longer I am involved in this thing of living one day at a time, and the more that I read and try to apply these steps to my life, the more it boils down to what my sponsor told me some over 15 years ago. It was just too simple, and I had to complicate the thing and to try to make the thing more complicated than what I thought it was. And my sponsor told me something then which worked with me. He said, if you're too darn smart for this program, that is not the exact words he used, I would suggest that you go out and drink a little more, and maybe you will become simple enough to work this simple program. And I took his advice, and it works. And didn't Dr. Bob stress the simplicity of this program? I will use throughout the evening some simple illustrations, and I have to use simple things, things that I can understand. And maybe you can understand some of these and can enlarge on these and go from there. But I had to get some things that I could understand. And today I still have to do the same thing. The simpler I can keep this thing, the better I get along. And didn't they tell us in the first part of the book that we of Alcoholics Anonymous are several thousand men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, to show others precisely how we have recovered is the real purpose of this book. And we trust no further authentication is necessary. This means to me that all I need is a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And to read this, and to work these steps in the order that they put the steps in the book to the best of my ability each day. And then it guarantees me something which I will talk a little bit about later on. So for God's sakes, try to the best of your ability to keep this thing simple. I mentioned my sponsor. I think sponsorship is most important. I'd be foolish if I went to the wilds of Africa hunting and didn't get me a guide. I'd be foolish if I went to some lake like Real Foot Lake to fish and didn't get me a guide. By the same token, coming into a way of life that I know absolutely nothing about, I'd be foolish if I didn't get me some guide, someone to show me the way and to walk with me and show me how this thing works. And another way to look at it is, I am depriving that would-be sponsor of one of the greatest benefits that he or she can get from the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, is sponsoring another human being or another individual. Sponsorship to me is real, real important. Gratitude. I think this program is based on gratitude. I think if I lose my gratitude, I will lose my sobriety. The people in my group call me hipped on gratitude. I have heard gratitude defined as a memory of the heart. And certainly tonight, I know that it is the granddaddy of all virtues. And without gratitude, I cannot have any of the other virtues. I am grateful for what my sponsor told me some 15 years ago. And incidentally, from Harold's neck of the woods in Texas, they say that if you don't give your sobriety date, you ain't got one. I very definitely have one. October the 15th, 1956. I don't know how long ago that was. I can't figure it up right now. And it may not impress you, but it impresses the hell out of me. Three judges back in my hometown and the whole darn police force. I am real proud of today and any other sobriety that I might have. And I'm grateful for what David told me in the beginning. He said, "Old buddy, you never have to sober up again, and you never have to be alone again if you don't want to. If you don't want to." And we have a way that we will show you, and not only will we show you, but we will walk with you down this pathway to sobriety and to living. And that is a wonderful message to me tonight, and I think it's a wonderful message to any person in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous or to any suffering alcoholic. You never have to be alone again, and you never have to sober up again if you don't want to. If you don't want to. And when I became willing to do the things that you told me and showed me how to do, I found this, among many other things, to be true. I mentioned I have to keep this program simple, and I think I can boil it down, in my opinion, to just six words. Find God, clean house, and help others. And where do I get this? From the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous in the 11th chapter, A Vision to You, which to me is as beautiful a series of words as I ever saw or I ever heard. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows, and clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you have found and join us. And we shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and surely you will meet some of us as you tread your road to happy destiny. Find God, clean house, and help others. And another thing to me, I can't give you any philosophy of life. I can't give you any philosophy of AA. As I told you, the only thing that I can do is to share with you. But the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me, this drunk, Franklin, that Alcoholics Anonymous is purely and simply a means of transferring faith. It tells me that I always had faith in something, and I did, because during my active alcoholism, my faith was transferred to the neck of the bottle, and this would change things for me. Any situation which was unbearable, a drink would change. Therefore, I had faith in that bottle. I think that anything that takes the place of God becomes my God. Therefore, the bottle became my God. And when I mention God, I want to say now that tonight I'm going to talk some about God. God as I understand Him. And I don't think there's any group of people anywhere in the world that are more qualified to talk about God than we, the recovering or recovered alcoholic, whichever you prefer to call it, in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. We, the living dead, we who have been lifted from the depths of despair, and we who have been given a spiritual release for a spiritual illness. Certainly, I am qualified to talk about God. I've never seen God, and I don't think any of you have. But I feel Him every time I'm in your presence. And I feel Him in your countenance. And I see Him in your eyes. And I feel Him when I'm sitting next to you. And I know where He is. And I know how to talk to Him. How? As the result of taking these steps. This can happen to any alcoholic or any person who becomes willing and will do these things, not as good maybe as you do them, maybe not as good as someone else does them, but to the best of his or her ability. This is the way it has happened with me. So transferring faith from the neck of the bottle, I was able to transfer faith to my sponsor, David, and to the people in the Quonset group, in my group. Gradually, without me knowing it, I was able to transfer this faith to God as I understood Him then, not as I understand Him now, because this understanding increases day by day as I wish it to, depending on how much I communicate and how much I do of these steps. This is my experience, and this is what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me will happen to me. And I know it wakes because it has waked with me. I know it wakes because I have seen it wake with you. There again, one of the greatest things that I think that we have to offer in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is the power of example. You people, what this thing has done for you. And I am able, thank God, to see this and feel that possibly I have been or am being a part of this. What is alcoholism? I don't know, and I don't think you know. And it's not important that I know. Whether I'm an alcoholic or alkeholic or whatever you want to call it, whatever it is, I got it. And I accept that today. And I went out trying to read a bunch of books that I didn't understand to find now I know, for two reasons: to try to impress people that I had read something or knew something that they didn't know, because I was afraid to read the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was afraid it might stop me from drinking, and I couldn't see life without drinking. And then another thing, I think I was trying to find an excuse to keep on drinking. But when I got down to the book of Alcoholics Anonymous and read in there where it told me, and I believe it will tell you, that if while drinking you find you cannot completely stop, or if while drinking you find you cannot control the amount you drink, then you are probably, now ain't that something? Probably an alcoholic. Lord, I could understand this. I could not stop, and I could not tell how much I was going to drink, and I could not tell what my actions were going to be. And then the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, goes on further to tell me that if such be the case, I am suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience can conquer. It tells me what's wrong with me, and it tells me what I must do. And it also tells me how I must do it. It said lack of power is my dilemma. How do I find this power? This is exactly why the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is written. And then it goes on to tell me that no amount of human willpower can stop me at times from taking the first drink. This power must come from a power greater than I. And how do I find it? It's by applying these steps to my personal life. And I found a God that I can communicate with, and that it is personal to me. It also tells me that I have a mental obsession coupled with a physical allergy. I don't know what these things are, and it's not necessary that I go into a lot of medical books to learn, because Dr. Bob told me, and he told me by telling you, and you told me, that just don't louse this thing up with a lot of, I forget his words now, medical terms, that these may be good for the medical profession, but they have little value to us. All I need is what this big book tells me, that I have a mental obsession, that I am obsessed of an idea that someday, some way, I'm going to find a way to drink successfully. And I can identify here, because this is a reason that I switched from one thing to another until I hit the silver cure and got on that wonderful wine. But this caused me to seek this mental obsession, seek a way to try to find a way to drink successfully, whatever that might be. Again, I use simple illustrations, and the best thing that explains it for me is an experience I had some 40 years ago in college, and I'll tell you, college lets you know that I am educated. When I was a freshman, I was going out for athletics, and we had a great big 6'4" boy, weighed 260 or 50 pounds, named Red McGinnis from Sullivan's Hollow. And many of you may not know where Sullivan's Hollow is, and that's not important that you know. It's just the toughest section of Mississippi. And those Sullivans are tough. And whatever they say is so, and you better believe it, if you don't take my word for it, because Red McGinnis taught me. And I made the mistake, and almost a fatal mistake, of smarting off to Red McGinnis one afternoon in the grill. I never laid a hand on Red McGinnis, and he darn near killed me. Every time I tried to get up, he'd knock me down. And were it not for some compassionate people who didn't want to see a boy killed and pull Red off of me, he would have killed me. Now, this was over 40 years ago. Tonight, I have no mental obsession whatever that I could say anything smart to Red McGinnis and get by with it. I completely, unconditionally surrendered to Red McGinnis. But you know I didn't do this with alcohol. I tried it many, many times, said it won't happen that way again. I'm going to try you again. And it wasn't until I had a Red McGinnis surrender to alcohol that I had any success with this program. I say to new people, you got to have a Red McGinnis surrender. They look at me with their mouth open. They don't know what I'm talking about. But I know what I'm talking about, and I better always know. I surrendered. Now, I can't tell you how to surrender. I wish I could. No, I don't, because then I'd be God. I'll talk some more about that a little bit later on. A mental obsession, coupled with a physical allergy. I don't know what this physical allergy is. We used to have a man in our group that was more educated than me. He was something. And he used to talk about capillaries. I don't know nothing about capillaries, and I don't need to know. All I need to know is what I just quoted you from the big book. I cannot tell how much I'm going to drink, and I cannot stop. I know I got it. Whatever it is, I got it. And that's all that is necessary for me. This old boy Julian from up at Luray explains it better than anybody I've ever heard. He says that the way they explained it to him, that his pipes was busted. Something wrong with his pipes. That evidently a strainer was busted, and the stuff went in and went the wrong way. And that's what happens to me, and that's simple enough that I can understand it. And that's all I need to know about it. Until I can get me a new strainer, well, I can't drink no more. And I haven't seen where any strainers is on the market. And I'm not looking for one tonight because this mental obsession has been removed. God has removed it as the result of these steps in this program. The only solution or the only remedy is a spiritual experience. And I will have this spiritual experience if I do these first 11 steps to the best of my ability. There again, Harold and I had a wonderful meeting this afternoon. I was telling him about almost getting run out of Memphis tea here not long ago by going around and telling in the group, how in the devil you're going to have an experience if you ain't waked the steps? And I said, now, in my opinion, if you got 30 people in your group, name but one person waked these steps, let that one person tote the message. Because what message do the rest of you have? And I believe this. Now, of course, they went around town quoting that I said that a man couldn't even call on a drunk if he hadn't waked all 12 steps. Well, I got across the point to them. I got them to thinking, and I told them to get in the big book. But I firmly believe that we do not have a message unless we have waked the steps to the best of our ability. Then we are qualified to tell that drunk, I call you drunks, that alcoholic, what he can expect from this program, because I have experienced these things, and I know it has happened, and it will happen. I think this mental obsession and this physical allergy bring on a spiritual illness. I heard an old boy down in Louisiana define it better than anybody I've ever heard. He said this spiritual illness is spiritual constipation. Too much of me unpassed. Too much ego, too much pride, too much selfishness, too much self-centeredness. And how do I get rid of these? 7 of our steps deal with getting rid of this spiritual constipation from steps 4 through 10. So it must be real important. And I think that before God can use me, he first has to destroy me. He has to get rid of me. Ego deflation at depth, the big book refers to it. Getting rid of me so he can come in and take over and wake. See, you and I are doing something together which I could not do alone. You and I are doing something together which I could not do alone. Now, in the 14 promises of AA on pages 83 and 84, it explains it to me this way. Suddenly, I will realize that God is doing for me what I could not do for myself. So I figured this thing out that God is working through you people. So I must be with you people in order for this thing to work, because you and I are doing something together which I could not do alone. So there has to be a power greater than me that's involved in this thing now. And tonight I do not hesitate, nor am I ashamed, to call this power God. God as I understand Him. I took my first drink when I was 16 years of age, and that's not important when, but 16 seems to be somewhat of a magic age in AA. I had to go back and analyze myself. Now, this was me. And see what kind of personality I brought to that first drink and try to figure out why I took it. Maybe this is not important to you. But tonight I have an answer which satisfies me. I took this first drink purely and simply to be a part of. The boys that I was associating with were a little older than me, and the ones who seemed to be having the fun and to be where the action was were those who were talking about drinking. So I took this drink to be a part of and to join the crowd. Being a part of, being a member, seeking a place in society is a God-given virtue. It's the extremities which I went to in order to achieve this that got me into trouble. I didn't know that I could be myself, something that you taught me in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as I have mentioned, I found out that alcohol would change things, no matter what the situation was. It would change things until I reached a point where it would no longer change things, and then I was hooked. There wasn't anything I could do about it. I'm not going to talk about my drinking, because the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous don't tell me how to drink or how not to drink. It tells me how to live. And I'm going to try to spend the next hour and a half or 2 hours telling you what this program means to me and the experiences that I have had as the result of these steps. I know that each and every one of us have to work this on an individual basis. But with me, I think I have to stick to the format of the big book, to the 12 steps, which are suggested, not suggested steps, but which are suggested as a program of recovery. That means to me that if I don't want to recover, well, I leave the steps alone. If I do want to recover, I've got to try to work these steps, and it's just that simple with me. I'll tell you about my last drunk, and that's the only one that's important to me, because that is the drunk that got me where I am tonight. I am firmly convinced that he who has forgotten his last drunk hadn't had it, and I certainly hope I have had mine. I don't regret any drink I ever took. Now, this may sound like an asinine statement to some of you. I don't regret hurting the people that I hurt. Certainly I'm sorry I hurt them. But it took every drink that I ever took. It took every hurt that I ever gave anyone to get me to where I am tonight. It was necessary for me. I thank God that these things happened to me, because I don't know of any way that I would have ever gotten where I am tonight had not these things happened. And I have done to the best of my ability going back and making amends. I have never made any progress in anything without pain. And I had to go through suffering, and I had to go through pain to get to where I am tonight. And I am truly grateful for it. And in this gratitude business, another thing I am grateful for, I am truly grateful that I don't have to manage my life tonight. That is a wonderful thing. I do not have to manage my life. This doesn't mean that I don't manage my life at times. Certainly I do. I try to take the bull by the horns and run things. But thank God I know where to turn when the going gets rough. I know where my manager is, and I know how to get in touch with him, and I know what I am supposed to do. And the quicker that I give it back to him, the less suffering and the less misery I go through. I left the state of Mississippi to come to the state of Tennessee to dodge a lunacy warrant. I came to Tennessee where I wasn't known to dodge this and to get away from those people who were causing me to drink and those things that were causing me to drink. Within a week or 10 days, I was in jail, which hadn't happened to me in Mississippi, and now I know why, because I was in a small town and the police knew my family. I thought it was because of who I was. But I got to Memphis and they didn't know me, and they slapped me in jail. And I had been engaged in some illegal activities for a long time that the men in blue frowned on. And when I got to Memphis, they particularly frowned on them. So I began to get in jail quite often. And all times it wasn't for just drinking. And on the most serious of these at that time, I was put in the county jail from the city jail, and my wife had had all she could stand, and she left. But thank God, before she left, she did one thing. She called someone that she knew, who knew someone in AA, and she's the woman that turned me into this outfit. That's how I got here. So I was contacted, and of course I was ready to let them come and see me and talk to me, and they gave me the pitch, and it didn't mean anything to me, because all I wanted to do was to get out of this trouble. So why did I come to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? Certainly not to quit drinking. I came to quit hurting. I came to get the police off of my back and to get others off of my back. I came to try to get a job, because I had run out of people long ago and there was no one who would give me a job. Then fourth, and maybe not in the order of importance, I came to try to get my first wife back. Now let me hasten to say that all of these things materialized in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous except me getting my first wife back. I did not get her back. But as I stated earlier, I met Eloise in this program and we were married. So if you have that worry, don't worry, because you can get another spouse in AA. And another thing, if you are a man and afraid you're going to lose your wife, don't worry, because hell, I'll give you Eloise. This is a program of sharing. So I went to AA just as little as possible, just in order to let certain people know that I was coming. And another reason I came, I said, to get the police off of my back, to kindly judge, through some pressure of some friends of my wife, my first wife, offered me the chance or the option of going to the penal farm or attending AA. And this was presented to me, and I weighed the situation very carefully. And I came to the decision that I had more to offer the program of Alcoholics Anonymous than I did to the penal farm. So this is one of the things to get people off of my back, is the reason I came. For 9 months, I continued to go and I continued to drink. I'd leave the meeting and drink, but I'd be sure that my first wife got the word that I was going to AA. And finally, after 9 months, I went to my first wife and said, "Honey, how sober do I have to get before you take me back?" And she told me some dreadful things. She took my inventory. She said, "Old buddy, you'll never get sober enough for me to take you back." And says another thing, said, "If you were to die tonight, who would be your pallbearers?" That hurt. See, a drunk don't like the truth. This drunk didn't. Some 2,000 years ago, a man said, "Know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Not knowing the truth, darn near killed me. See, I didn't have the ability to see myself as I really was. I didn't want the truth. I didn't want to hear the truth. So what did I do? I reached for that which I had had faith in, John Barleycorn, to change things. See, I hurt in here. I didn't want to hurt my wife. I didn't want to hurt my mother. I didn't want to hurt my loved ones and my friends. But I didn't know any other way. I am convinced tonight that there's no such thing as a bad person. There are those who know and those who do not know. And I did not know. I'm not foolish enough to stand up here and tell you that I didn't know the difference between right and wrong. Surely I did. But I didn't know a way. I don't mean to knock psychiatry. I don't mean to knock the church. I tried both of these, but I didn't get my answer because I wasn't looking for my answer there, and I wasn't truthful. And I have never seen an active alcoholic who was truthful. Lying goes along with the disease of alcoholism. I have never seen an active alcoholic that would tell the truth. So I wasn't looking for an answer. But the only thing they ever told me was to join this Sawdust Trail. And I couldn't buy that. See, this old drunk was offered love, but he wasn't offered understanding. And I had to have love coupled with understanding. They pointed a finger at me, but they never pointed away. And it wasn't until I came to you people when you not only pointed away, but this, you said you would walk with me. And my sponsors put their arms around me and walked with me and are still walking with me. And I wonder today who sponsors whom, whether I sponsor David or whether he sponsors me. But there again, it goes back to what I said. We are doing something together, which I could not do alone. I know it is God working through David, and it is God working through you that tells me the things I need to know when I need to know them, and when God knows I am ready to listen to them. So this is another reason it's important that I stay with you people. So I did the only thing that I knew to do when she told me this. I reached for that which would change things, and it didn't change them. And I got on the best drunk I ever got on, because that's the drunk that got me here. I had thought I had tried numerous ways to take my life up until then. Tonight I know I had not tried them. All I was doing was trying to get sympathy. I didn't want to hurt me. And this death business was final. And I didn't want it. I say that I'd try these things and my wife would come in just in time to save me. Then I'd try these things and if she didn't come in, I'd wait on her. But on this drunk, I drank just as much as I could, just as long as I could, and I got just as sick as I always did, and alcohol would no longer do the things for me that it used to change things. And I hit a point that I had never hit before. I surrendered. And I mentioned earlier, I wish I knew how to tell you how to surrender. I don't. And I don't think any of us do, and we're not supposed to, because we're not God. I had been just this sick many times before. I had reached just this state of hopelessness many times before, but this feeling hadn't come. I think that God knew that I had reached a point that I was willing to do something, and I had some help from Him, and He let me see just enough of me to see who I was and what I was and what I had to do. See, I was living in a little garage apartment as gratis of friends. I had borrowed a car as gratis. I had stolen a piece of hose, not as gratis, but stealing had become a way of life with me. And I had determined that I was going to end my life. And I had written a note. And I can remember reading that note and sucking on that bottle. And I'd write a little and I'd cry a little. I just loved to cry when I was drunk. And I'd write, and I could see my wife at the funeral, and I could see her standing up over the casket and looking down and saying, "You poor dear, if I had only tried to help you, and if I hadn't left you in a time of need when I might have could have been some help to you, this would have never happened." And she had two idiot brothers that were always giving her advice about me. And I could see these idiots standing up there bow on either side with their arms around them, and saying, Franklin was a good boy. I wish we had helped him. And then she had two numbskull cousins who were MDs that had suggested sending me to Whitfield, this resort down in Mississippi. And they were going to sign the papers, and I didn't know whether blood relatives could do it or not, even though these were not blood relatives of mine. But I wasn't going to stick around long enough for a Supreme Court ruling to see. That's the reason I got the devil out of Mississippi. And I could see them saying, we were wrong about Franklin. We never should have signed those papers. We should have helped him. We killed Franklin. And I drank a little more and cried a little more. So finally, I went out to the car and got in and started the engine. And a very peculiar thing happened. I got thirsty. I remembered that in my room in this garage apartment, I had a little spider left, and what a shame to leave this cruel world and leave that drink behind. So I went back to polish off that last drink, and something happened. I passed out. And sometime in the wee hours of the morning of October the 15th, 1956, I waked up. Now hear this, I waked up. I didn't come to, I waked up. And that's when I surrendered, and that's when I had this help from God to do it. My whole life passed before me, and I saw things in a perspective which I had never seen them before. I no longer blame my wife. I no longer blame these idiot brother-in-laws. I no longer blame these numbskull cousins, these employers. I knew where the blame was, and I knew where the answer was, because I even though I had been around you for 9 months with a closed mind, I had heard some of the things you said. And I fell to my knees, and the first time in my adult life, I said a honest and sincere prayer. I don't know what all I said except three words. I know I said, God help me. And I don't know how long I stayed on my knees, but long enough. Long enough to make a decision and to make a contract. And I think on my knees in that garage apartment in the early morning hours of October the 15th, 1956, I took the first three steps of this program, and I think you can take them sitting down. But I think after three, you got to get up off of it and do something. So I admitted that I could not drink, period. I could not determine how much I was going to drink once I started, and I couldn't control when I started. So I knew that I had a problem with alcohol, whether I wanted to call it an alcoholic or not. And I knew I could not manage my life, period, drunk or sober. I surrendered. I knew that if my life was unmanageable, I needed a manager, and I remembered that you people told me that that's what the second step was, and you introduced me to my manager. Now, if my life's unmanageable and I need a manager, then it only made sense to me that I turned my life and will over to him, and that's what the third step told me. I realized that if my life was unmanageable and I need a manager, and I turned my life over to this manager before he's going to come and move in this house of mine, I had to first clean it up. And that's what steps 4 through 11 through 10 told me to do. And I set about to do these things to the best of my ability according to the way my sponsor David told me and read to me in the big book. 2 days after this experience in this automobile and in this apartment happened, I got captured. The police captured me. And I knew they was going to do this because I had talked to David. I knew some of the things that I had done. I didn't know all of the things that they later accused me of. I don't know whether I did or whether I didn't. But I knew that I had done some, and David said, they're going to get some of your time, and there's some things you're going to have to do. And says, you're going to have to start talking to this God you don't understand and to ask him to to tell him that you no longer are running things, that all you're going to do is report for duty and for him to tell you what to do. And says, you're going to have some tough hills to go. But if you follow what we tell you to do, this power that you don't understand will show you a way. So they took me back to jail. And laying up there in that jail, I got to thinking, oh, buddy, you done got yourself in a devil of a mess. You done lined yourself up with these spiritual mongrels, and look where you are, in jail. You could have done better than this on your own. You better take this thing back and see what you can do. And I don't know where this came from. There again, I do It came from a power that I didn't understand at that time, and now I understand as God. I fell to my knees and said, God, I don't know you and I don't understand you, but whatever it is that you want me to do, give me the strength and the courage to do it, and I'll try it. And I went to the Pennell Farm, feeling or having or being wanted or feeling a part of is real important. I got to feeling a part of that Pennell Farm and a feeling of this being the place that I needed to be. And I did many things out there which were beyond what I was capable of doing. I tried to sober up the whole Pennell Farm. I was going to abolish that thing. But it was good for me because it kept me busy in this program. It kept me active, and action is a key word in this thing. So I set about to do these things. Before this old drunk could find out anything about the disease of alcoholism, I had to first find a group of people who knew of the disease. Before this old drunk could find out anything about love, I had to find a group of people who knew about love. And before this old drunk could find out anything about God, I had to find a group of people who knew about God. And I found these people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But before I could find out these things, I had to learn to communicate with you. So in the 11th step, before I could find out too much about God, I had to learn to communicate with Him. So I sought through listening and talking to a power I did not understand to improve my conscious contact. To improve implies that I have had a previous contact. I sure as the devil had. In step two, I came to believe that. Not in, I came to believe that. Whatever power was helping you could help me. And I accepted the group as my higher power to begin with, maybe subconsciously. I came to believe that. In waking steps 4 through 10, I came to believe in. I came to believe in. Why? Because I had some experiences. I have a God I can understand tonight because He is a God of experience, a God that I have experienced. What are some of these things that happened? Certainly this deal in the car was a spiritual experience. I didn't recognize it as such sin. Certainly this deal on my knees was a spiritual experience. I didn't recognize it then. It was a spiritual awakening because something in me waked up that wasn't there before. Where it came from, I didn't know at the time. Tonight, I do know. I was told by David, I told him that I had a compulsion to drink 24 hours a day if I was awake that much. He asked me to ask God to remove it and to do these things that He was telling me to do. I didn't believe it awake, but I started trying, and I started to thanking this power I didn't understand at night. And some months later, I waked up one day and realized I didn't want to drink, and I couldn't figure out how long it had been since I had wanted one. To me, that is where faith was born. I took a simple idea that my sponsor told me and put it into action, and when it happened, I knew that this didn't come from the Quonset group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew that the removal of this compulsion came from God, and I had faith. With faith comes courage. Faith is lack of fear, courage is lack of fear, but I needed courage to get into the fourth step, and I needed courage to get into the balance of this thing. What are some other experiences I had? I became more self-honest. I became more tolerant. Many of the other character defects, we don't get rid of these. I became aware of them and could recognize them. And with His help, don't we say, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings? I was asking His help, and some of these burdens were being lifted from me. So my God tonight is a God of experience. Therefore, He is a meaningful God to me. What do I pray for? The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me what to pray for. I don't always do it. I sometimes pray for things. And I think it's all right to pray for things if I can accept no or maybe as an answer. But it tells me what to pray for. Only knowledge of his will and the power to carry that out. There's an old Chinese proverb that states that any journey starts with the first step. I can't get to that door back there unless I take the first step. By the same token, in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can't get anywhere until I take the first step and admit what my problem is. And what is my destination? It's the 12th step, a spiritual awakening. And how do I know this? Because the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that the real purpose of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is to prepare me to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. And what is being of maximum service? If it isn't toting this message and practicing these principles in all my affairs. And didn't Dr. Bob tell us way back in 1950 that this thing boils down to love and service? And what is that but the 12th step of toting this message and practicing these principles? And what principles am I talking about practicing? I'm talking about the principles I learned in the first 11 steps of this program. Basically, they're the old four absolutes. If you want to go back to the Bible, it's the commandments. But it's the thing, the principle of honesty, the principle of love. And it boils down to the two principles, which only mean love, because the other is simply a synonym for love. Practice these in all of my affairs. Where do I take this thing first? The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me very plainly to take it home, and then take it to my work. Practice it in all of my affairs. There seemed to be a Jewish carpenter back some 2,000 years ago that seemed to be pretty good at toting this message himself. And one of his followers, Peter, asked him, "Master, what shall I do?" And he said, "Love me and tend my sheep." And he asked him over the third time, and Jesus told him the same thing each time, "Love me and tend my sheep." That's what, in my opinion, the 12th step or this program of Alcoholics Anonymous is telling me tonight. To tote this message and practice love and service, tend his sheep in all of my affairs. And it just could be that in toting this message and tending to his sheep, that I get to know the shepherd just a little bit better. How did I get this? How long do I have this thing that I have tonight? The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous very plainly tells me that I only have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And how am I going to maintain my spiritual condition if it isn't in the practicing of the last three steps and in toting this message and helping other alcoholics and practicing these principles in all of my affairs? How did I get this thing? Did I earn it? I certainly did not. By the grace, the unearned favor of God. And I think I can best tell you how I got it by telling you something that the disciples were told by Jesus some 2,000 years ago. Jesus told them to ask and ye shall receive. Seek and ye shall find, and knock and the door shall be opened unto you. I asked and I received a release from my compulsion to drink. I sought and I found you people, and in finding you people, I found God. I knocked and I used willingness as a key, and the door was opened unto me, and I stepped through this archway. And there again, I found you people. And in finding you people, I found love. And in finding love, I found God. Peace, happiness, and serenity slipped in the back door. May God always bless the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love every one of you. God bless you.